It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here from Barcelona, where it's sweltering hot. Mary Jo Foley's back from the Imagine Cup at Microsoft. She'll tell us about that. We'll find out about the little feud going on between Paul and Microsoft and a whole lot more. Windows Weekly, coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 374, recorded August 6th, 2014. Cover your ears, Isabella. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try it today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Windows. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code Windows, and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover all the Microsoft stuff with Mary Jo Foley. She's all about Microsoft.com. Hi, Mary Jo.
Idea.
Good to see you. Welcome back from the Imagine Cup.
Thanks.
In the beautiful Pacific Northwest. From Barcelona, it's Fozzie Bear, a.k.a. Paul Thurrott. he's in a darkened apartment. Wait, is it like 8 at night? It's pretty late, right?
It is, yeah, 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Paul is the...
By the time we're done, it should be pitch black here.
Yeah, good. Good. He's the major domo at the beautiful supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, the author of many a book about Windows. And as really any freelance tech writer could, Mike Elgin was doing this for a while. You could work from anywhere. So every summer you go to Europe,
right,
which is great. Are you going to be there all through August?
You know, it's funny, the Mike Elgin bit is interesting because he had friended me on Facebook before he joined Twit, and he was in, I want to say, South Africa first, so somewhere in Africa, and then he went to Barcelona, and he posted a beautiful panorama from a cafe seat, and I wrote him a message, and I said, we've never met, but I hate you.
I think I love you. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is
really neat. He gave us some good tips too.
He's a great traveler. Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember, but I think it was Barcelona. It was either Mike or I think maybe it was Dvorak got pickpocketed in Barcelona.
Oh,
just a word of warning.
Yeah.
The Rambla is where everybody goes, but yeah.
Yeah.
And have you gone to a nightclub at 3 a.m. and partied? Hardy?
No, I'm old, Leo. I fall asleep on the couch and I get up at 6. And by the way, when I do that, I am the only person in this entire city that's awake.
Let us talk to Mary Jo before we go too far about the Imagine Cup. Anything to report? Was it fun? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was really fun and really inspiring to see the stuff that college students built. It was cool. Pretty insane.
So these are all college kids, and mm-hmm. when you say built, what is it? Is it like a science project? What is it that they're doing?
Yeah, they give them different categories to compete in, so they can develop a game. They can develop what they call tech for good, which are like citizenship projects, or they can develop what I was judging, which is the innovation category.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes both software and hardware. There were a lot of really cool, like, robots and machines that were powered by apps that the students built. It was pretty interesting.
That's really neat. And did you sit across from Satya Nadella in the judging process?
At the very end, the last day, we get to go to Tech Ready, which is Microsoft's internal version of TechEd. And that's where the finals were judged. And he was sitting right on the stage, and we were a little ways away from him.
But you didn't get to, like, well, you probably waved.
Yeah, we waved. Yeah. We waved from afar.
What kind of shoes was he wearing? No, that's absurd. That's, so that's fun. How fun. Who else was on the panel?
It was cool. On the panel I was on, which was the innovation panel, there were a few of us. There was Bill Buxton, who's a Microsoft researcher who's done a lot of work around wearables and other categories. And John Shuchuk, who's one of the longtime tech fellows at Microsoft. He was on my panel, too. And yeah, there were just a ton of really interesting judges from all over the place. There are people from Reddit, there are people from Facebook, and they had a really good crew of people who were checking out all these projects.
What fun. What fun.
It was very fun.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of work. Even judging was a lot of work. We had to be at Microsoft at 7 a.m. one day to look at the projects. Yeah.
And
it was early.
Do you want to say anything about the winners or in the innovation category or...
Yeah, I can tell you who the main winner was, who won the overall competition. They were really interesting. They were med students who were also programmers from Australia, and their name was Team Inemia. And they developed an app and a little color chart that lets you take a selfie, and you hold the color chart under your eye while you're taking the selfie. And because you can look inside your eye and match it up with the color, you can tell if you're anemic.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And that's already being piloted as something to help people who don't have access to doctors all over the world. So they won the top prize. And as part of the top prize, they get a mentoring session with Bill Gates.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Private meeting with Bill Gates. They won a lot of money. I think they won over $50,000, I believe.
That's really
to continue with their app.
Cool. And they're from Australia.
They're from Australia.
That is really. And it was just the two of them?
Yeah, team of two.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Were they?
It was very, very.
Were
impressive.
They med students? What was their?
I think they were med students, as far as I recall. Yeah, they were cool. There were just so many really unusual, interesting projects. One that in my category that I judged that I really liked was called nail polish mixer, which sounds kind of weird. It was two women students, computer science students from the Bahrain, who built a machine that automatically allows women to mix custom nail polish colors. And they also are selling this to salons.
Awesome.
Yeah. And they built an app where you can like take a picture of your dress and match it to your nail polish color. And I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of weird. But it was so impressive that they went and built machines. Like they went on Google and looked at videos like, how do you build a machine? And then they brought a prototype that they had built out of a shoebox to a factory and said, hey, here's what we want to build. And they helped them build it.
Wow.
Really, pretty impressive.
Really cool. Well, congratulations to all the winners and to Inemia for the global win. That's really cool. That's really
very
cool.
Very fun.
Yeah. It was nice that you got to do that.
It was.
Paul's strolling the nude beaches, and you're helping change the world. So there you go. It's just
talent. Listen, we all have our own priorities, Leo.
let us delve into Microsoft Windows 8.1 update. Just an update. It's not update 2. Pay no attention. Or is it?
So, by the way, I don't know how well you can hear me or whatever. Because I'm away this week, Mary Jo and I haven't really talked.
Wait a minute. Did I do that? Did I put a cloud? What happened?
Cloud.
I have a cloud.
It's
oh,
a
thank
dark
you.
Cloud.
I guess I pushed the R button and the rain cloud popped up. I'm sorry. Because you're out of town.
No, I can't see it.
No, only those at home could see it. All I know is Alex Gumpel goes running. I pushed a button, an odd button. I don't know what button. And Alex fixed it, so thank you. That was one cloud. Wow. So this is update 2, which will come out next week, Patch Tuesday, for Windows 8.1. If you already have update 1?
Let me see.
And Microsoft apparently doesn't want us to call it update 2.
They do not. Nope.
What is it?
It really is update 2, despite what you may read on other sites and blogs that claimed we were duped. Nope, this is update 2, everybody. We were not duped.
We were not duped.
Microsoft's calling it August updates.
I have a bigger issue with this. It's not so much, you know, what people think or whatever. It's that Microsoft, in their official blog post, said something about don't believe the rumors and the speculation. There's no, you know, they actually put that in a blog post. And I actually stripped a paragraph out of the post I wrote about this because I got really irritated with that because it was clearly directed at Mary Jo and myself.
Really?
And, you know, the people that wrote that post know that this is Update 2. They know that it's called Update 2 internally. They know that they've stripped features from it and they've turned it into an inconsequential update. For them to actually go online in a public post on the company's website in this day and age is, I actually think, unforgivable. I found that to be incredibly insulting.
Do you feel like they spanked you?
Our job better than all of those other guys. You know, that was bullshit. I thought that was awful.
But you know what, Paul? You know why I wasn't mad? I'll tell you why I wasn't mad when I read it. Yeah. If you know, like you do, how Microsoft denies things, the way they deny things is they deny a very, very specific statement.
Right.
So that they can say that they're not lying. So they said, despite rumors and speculation, we are not planning to deliver a Windows 8.1, in quotes, Update 2. Right. They aren't going to call it that. But it doesn't mean that's not what this is.
Right.
So what is in a name? I mean, what does it matter what you call it? Why? I don't understand. To the average Joe, call it Fred. It doesn't matter. What is it and why do we care? Yeah.
I just had this conversation with someone from Microsoft in the context of Windows Phone 8.1 Update 1, which they're calling Update.
Right.
And off the record, this person agreed with me that internally it's GDR1, it's Update 1. It's the same naming convention they've used for years. Why they've gone with this update thing has something to do with the Windows team, and they wanted to, you know, connect it to that, and even though it has no connection whatsoever, they feel like if they call it Update 1, that suggests they're implicitly agreeing to do an Update 2, and they don't want to agree to anything that they're not sure they're going to do, and on and on and on. It goes, it's stupid. And it doesn't really matter what it's called. The point is we know what it is. They know what it is. We've accurately reported what it is. And for them to actually then, you know, retroactively come out and say, oh, no, there's no plans to do anything like that. Those guys, whoever told you that is involved in rumors and speculation. It's just so childish and it's so the last regime, you know? Like,
I agree with you.
That's awful. That's
like, guys, we swept out a lot of the problems from previous regime. Let's keep that good momentum coming.
And by the way... Here we are trying to communicate something effectively because you can't.
Yes.
And then you have the balls. I don't know how else to say it. To come out later and then act like, oh, those guys. You know what? I'm sorry. That really upsets me. It was wrong. This is wrong.
We have a nice family in the studio today. There's small children here. So it's not okay to talk like this, okay? Unless you're a wronged technology journalist. and what's happened is you need to understand the context. They've been beating Paul down for years, and he just finally, he ain't going to take it no more.
I'm fighting back. He's not getting beat. He's getting angry.
But I think that's a very salient point because Microsoft is unable to communicate effectively. Because ultimately, this comes down, I'm playing this person, this normal person. I don't care what you call it. I just want to know what it is and what I get from it and whether I need it. Yeah. And if it's miscommunicated by Microsoft, it is absolutely your duty to communicate it properly so people understand what they're getting. You're making up for their lack.
You know, if they had followed the plan that they had earlier this year to include the mini start menu in Update 2, I'm pretty sure they would have called this out as Update 2 or called it at least a second update or something. They changed their mind shortly after build, from what we've heard from our sources, decided to take the mini start menu out. So then what they were left with were some very minor things, and I think they just kind of wanted to sweep that under the rug and say, hey, those are just regular updates like we always make, except... Here was your clue. Other updates they make to Windows, they don't call out like this way in blog posts, right? They just deliver them as
they've
part
never
of
done it once.
Here we go. It's Patch Tuesday, and look at what you're going to get.
Exactly. Right. That's why
the one thing
it's Update 2.
The one thing that they communicated in that post that I sort of appreciated was this notion that obviously everyone at Microsoft or all of the teams at Microsoft are working on this rapid release cycle. It's different for every team. And with Windows, we had this sort of notion that, you know, we went from 3-year releases down to 18-month releases with, you know, 8.1 down to whatever it was, 3 or 6 months with, for, I guess that was for update one. And, you know, now they're talking, well, you know, we'll put little updates out every month in Patch Tuesday, which frankly is probably the right way to do it. Just eliminate that Big Bang approach other than for the major release.
But here's also what they're trying to do from what we've heard. They're trying to establish a thing that they call serviceability. And that means they're trying to establish a pattern inside Windows now where they have these regularly scheduled, maybe twice a year or three times a year, updates. And I don't know if they're going to call them updates or what they're going to call them, just like what they do with Windows Phone, right? They're going to start doing this with Windows too. So this is one of those, but they're not wanting to call it out that way for whatever reason, whether that's because they think it'll panic normal users or whatever it is. But I think they could have really called this out and said, hey, guys, we're speeding up the Windows trains even more. And here's update 2. Isn't this awesome? You're getting another update. Mm-hmm, yeah. They didn't do it that way. But yeah.
So from the point of view of us unwashed masses who don't follow this day in, day out. Yeah. We're going to see on Tuesday an update.
What's going on?
You're saying it's more than a hot fix.
Yes.
It is going to do what? What's it going to do?
Leo, not much, right?
Hence Microsoft's reluctance to call it an update too, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, but you know what? If they're doing one of these every month, who cares what they call it? In other words, this type of update on a monthly schedule is great.
Yeah, it's kind of like what they do with the Xbox One. Xbox One has significant updates every month now. UI interface updates.
It's not that good, actually.
It's not as good as an Xbox One.
It's not that good.
But, okay, so let me propose a language that might work here. If it is a security fix or a patch, you know, something that improves performance or behind the scenes, if there's no user interface change, that's a hot fix. That doesn't really change anything. If there is a perceptible change to the user interface, certainly a mini start menu would be that, then it would be an update of some kind. I don't care if you want to call it update one, or you could call it, you know, call it the August update. I don't care. But that's the difference between a patch or a hotfix and an actual update. There's something it's going to look different. Something's going to happen. And I, as a user, I want to know that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what they're doing, right? They're saying
it is.
They're acknowledging that.
Leo, this is like that adage about the weather, no matter where you live.
Right.
If you don't like it, wait until tomorrow. You know, it's Microsoft. If you don't like this naming convention, don't worry about it. It's going to be different in September. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
The point is, they were going to do something, then they did something else. That doesn't matter in the slightest. I mean, our job is just to report on it accurately.
Here's
it's
what
just
they did.
The kind of way they communicated it.
Right.
Yeah, it's too bad. Yeah.
They baffled. I understand what happened here. They made a change. They wanted to. They had telegraphed something different to you guys.
I enjoy that you think you understand.
You see, that's how naive I am. How innocent I am.
No, it's good. It's
somebody has to stay uncynical here, and I think Mary Jo's right. They wanted to be able to do the non-denial kind of thing. You know, where it's all semantic. So yes, we didn't release a update two.
Mm-hmm.
You're scapegoats. Here, they scapegoated you, and that's fine. And I understand why you're upset about that.
Listen, nobody enjoys a good prank as much as I do. But the problem with this, I don't know, if Mary Jo, if you noticed this, but when you name something the August update for Windows 8.1, you have just named something for some August, like.
Yeah.
The Xbox uses the same naming convention. So they'll have something called the August update for Xbox One.
I think that's
One.
Fair. Yeah.
Well,
Surface August, does, right?
Well, except
Surface
that it's not.
Right.
No, but it's August what? There's going to be an August next year, too. You're not going to update anything. I mean, why can't they be precise? I don't understand. These naming conventions make no sense.
You know what? Part of this, too, is because they don't want us to show people how the sausage is made, right? They just want to come out when they're ready and say, here's your update. They don't want us to report that they were going to do this, then they changed their mind, then they did this, and then they changed the name. They don't want that insider baseball out there publicly.
Well, so, and they're selling sausage, but they're telling you it's prime rib. I mean...
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you are going to get three...
It's a veggie sausage.
It's not merely they don't want you to know how it's made. They kind of don't want you to know what it is.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you're getting three things as part of this update, too. You're getting some touchpad improvements. You're getting Miracast receive capabilities. And you're getting a SharePoint online login prompt minimizer. Okay, very, very small things. But those are part of what was going to be called update, too.
Go ahead.
But I just want to, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's even less than what you just said. So the SharePoint thing, you're getting a checkbox.
I know.
That will tell the system not to bother you again. You're literally getting a checkbox.
Yeah.
And that Miracast receiver thing, that's not a feature of Windows. It's just APIs so the developers can write a Miracast receiver application for Windows. By the way, an application that can only work on the desktop. It's not Miracast receive for modern Windows. It's only for the desktop. Mm-hmm. This is a really lame set of updates.
Yeah. I agree. They could have called it the update lame or lame update, but they decided August instead. And we should say also, it's not just client. So Windows Server 2012 R2 is also getting an update next week that they also are not calling update to. And it's going to have different performance and reliability changes that we still don't know what those are. But there will be no changes to the APIs. So if your app already is on there, it should still just work. That's all we know about the server side one.
Okay.
This is why we drink on the job.
But I got to tell you, you guys are deep in it. This makes more difference. This is a big deal for you in a way that it's really not.
I know. I agree. Else.
We're going to get something on Tuesday. Oh, big deal. Whatever. Yep. Something happens.
Yep.
I don't care. You could call it, Fred. It doesn't matter to me.
The reason this is sort of a big deal is because for a brief moment in time, and we could literally be talking about just a few weeks, this was going to be a major deal.
Oh, okay.
There was that moment in April where they thought, we can do more. We can do this faster.
Yeah.
We can bring the start menu up before threshold. Let's do it. It will be update 2. It will be amazing. It's coming out
in August.
That
would have been a big deal.
And I haven't heard this. And then I don't know what happened. I don't know if Mary Jo knows what happens, but something happened internally. This was a more difficult project than they thought. Maybe they just decided to rally around, threshold. Whatever the reason, they scaled it back. So it was just a very short period of time. Where this could have turned into something very major. And I think that's why it's even more disappointing in a way, if you kind of know what was happening, what it turned into. Because this was very close to being something very cool.
Yeah, so that's the truth, is that most of us don't really know that.
Yeah.
Only people who...
Yes.
I don't even know. Do I know that? Did you talk about this last week? I didn't know that they were thinking about bringing back the start menu Tuesday.
Well, it would have been...
We talked about it a while ago, right?
Oh,
a couple of months ago, maybe.
Average user doesn't know that what they're missing. Only those who are paying close attention.
I am literally here to disappoint people. So that is my primary function.
Hey, let's take a break.
I thought Windows was doing great.
We've got more to talk about. While we take a break, Mary Jo, we're going to recall you because... Oh, wait a minute. You stopped freezing.
I unfroze myself, I think.
Oh, wow. I looked up and she's moving, folks.
Skype has just been fun.
I just want to turn this into an audio show. No, we're going to keep going.
We're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I know. We're going to soldier through here. More with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. And there is a new version of Windows coming called Threshold, Windows 9, whatever they're going to name it. And there's more UI tidbits surfacing. We'll have that for you in just a second. But first, a word about a great product for anybody who is in business and needs to share files. It's pretty much the case, I would say, that many business emails, I know many of the emails I get from work, from clients, have attachments. In our case, it's copy or presentations. We often get PowerPoint presentations in email. This is not secure. It's not safe. You've heard me inveigh again and again against email attachments. Don't send attachments. It's dangerous. It's how viruses get sent. It's how, crypto locker gets sent. It, even if it comes from somebody you know, it's dangerous. Plus, there's the larger issue. Is this file secured? You know, it's going through the public internet. Who is it safe? There's a solution that is made for business by business, Citrix ShareFile. Citrix knows what business needs. If you use Windows, I know you know the name Citrix. ShareFile is a great solution. Instead of sending an email attachment, you're going to send a secure link. That means you can send files of almost any size without bounce backs. I think 10 gigabytes is the limit. That should be enough for anybody. Try sending 10 gigabytes through your email if you want to break it. You decide who has access to your files, for how long. You'll get notifications telling you who opens your files and when. And you can even password protect the files for optimal security. Secure, easy, and you don't have to be a guru to use ShareFile or to receive ShareFile. And that's important to me. I use ShareFile every single week. I'm going to use it today to send commercials and announcements and things to the various radio stations that I do the radio show for. And because the people who are getting these files are not, computer geeks, they're normal people, ShareFile is a great solution for them. I'll show you how I use it. I'll pick a file and I'll send it along to somebody. I send along voice tracks all the time, for instance, to radio stations. Hi, this is Leo Laporte with Ibid Tad. I've always listened to KBMW. So these are the files. I have a desktop synchronization. So actually, these were in a folder. I guess still are in a folder on my desktop. It automatically synchronizes up to the share file folder. If I want to send a file, I click the send button. You can also do this with a plugin. They've got widgets. There's lots of ways to do this to make it as easy as possible. I'm going to just get a link and look at the settings here. I can say, email me when the file's been downloaded. Require recipients to enter name and email address. I can say how long they can access it. When the access expires, I could say how many downloads per user. So you really have control. I could say they've got this. In fact, I often do this for a week because this advertisement's not going to be good after a week. And I'm going to say they can download it an unlimited number of times because maybe they, need it a couple of times. When I get the link, I can just put it in the email. And this is a secure link. Notice HTTPS. That link, when they get it, they click it in the email. I'll show you what they get. Couldn't be easier. They don't have to understand ShareFile. They see my branding, by the way, not ShareFile's branding. They see a big download button that tells them what the file is, how big it is. It makes it as simple as possible. And I have, I've used every possible way to get these files to these radio stations. I've never had anything that worked as well as ShareFile. They get it. They understand it. It works. They even get notifications. I can set it up that they get notifications when I've uploaded a new file. I don't even have to send them an email. If I don't want to. ShareFile is fabulous. I want you to try it for 30 days. It's absolutely free for 30 days. Visit ShareFile.com. Do me a favor, though. When you go there, you'll see a number of places you can start your free 30-day trial. There's one up at the very top. This is the one I want you to click. It says podcast listeners. That's a special link that'll give you a chance to enter in the word Windows. You select the industry, too, because they'll customize it. It is HIPAA compliant. It's compliant with SEC regulations in the financial services industry. If you're an attorney, you need ShareFile. You don't have that silly disclaimer I see attorneys put in there. Hey, this was intended for somebody. If you're not that person, delete it right now without reading it. Right now. That doesn't work. That fact makes me want to read it. So use ShareFile instead, and you can actually control who is reading that stuff. Select your industry, enter the code Windows, and you can start your free trial for 30 days. And if you're not the decider in chief at your business, show the CIO, the CTO, the IT guy, because this is really a great solution. We love it here. ShareFile.com from Citrix. Please try it free for 30 days, but do use the offer code Windows, if you will, so that Paul and Mary Jo get credit. That is Paul on the left. Looking good, Paul.
Yeah.
Something happened.
Really?
Oh, you turned on a light.
Oh, yes, I did.
Suddenly we can see your shining face. Mary Jo on the right, she's from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Together, there's probably no team of people more up on what's going on in Windows and more hated by the Microsoft marketing office. Come on, Mary Jo, is Paul being paranoid when he said that this was targeted at you two?
Well, we've been kind of vocal in talking about update 2.
Oh, it was aimed at you, wasn't it?
It could be us. There could be others involved as well.
You know what they're saying. You know what? We need to shape this message this way.
Yeah.
Blame Paul and Mary Jo implicitly. They're good characters. They're good. They'll take it. They won't swear at us or anything.
Screw those guys.
segment two. Threshold. Is this an internal name from Microsoft? Threshold.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Such a code terrible name code name. Threshold.
It comes
of
from
what?
Halo. It comes from Halo.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, you know, they're doing a lot of Halo-inspired code names now.
Cortana. It's not even a code name.
Right.
Yeah. Next version of OneDrive is called Master Chief. That's exciting. No, I made that up.
That would be kind of funny.
Would it?
It would make me start to have to get Xbox just so I could keep up with the code names.
So
Master Chief will be the next version of Clippy.
Right.
Hey, I wouldn't mind if Clippy carried a BFG 9000 and had a suit on. That'd be okay. I could dig that. So
and he could talk like Duke Nukem. And
yeah. I'm ready. So
damn, I'm looking good.
Tell us what we know now. What's new about Threshold?
Okay. So Threshold is what we believe Microsoft's ultimately going to call Windows 9 when it comes out next spring. We've talked a lot about Threshold on the show, and we haven't really known a whole lot about the UI other than it's going to get the mini start and that there's going to be the ability to have windowed Metro style apps on the desktop. Those are the two things we know about Threshold.
So this week, it's going to add the two features that Stardock offers now for $5.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Brad Wardell, the head of Stardock, he's already working on something new to go beyond this.
He's going to bring back something called the start screen.
Yeah, exactly.
You wanted tiles? We've got tiles. Because it's a start 8 brings back the start menu in Stardock's $5. And then what is it, Modern Mix.
Modern Mix.
That does windowed Metro apps. Mm-hmm. $5. So what is the mini start, by the way? This is a new term. Maybe I missed it. Maybe it happened when I was on vacation. Is that the same as a start button?
No, it's meant to imply that it's a start menu that's different from the start menu we have now in Windows 7 and Vista. Okay. It's going to work in a different way and look somewhat different because it'll support live tiles.
Because why would they want to do it the same way?
Right.
They've been doing it since...
And they need something to fix for Windows 10, Leo.
Yeah.
There does feel like there is a change it for change's sake mentality a little bit.
It did feel like that with Windows 8 a bit. And I feel like we can say now it's pretty clear Microsoft's undoing a lot of the design decisions they made in Windows 8.
But why not just do the regular start menu? Because you want tiles in the mini start
menu? Yeah. They're not going to totally do away with Start the way it looks in Windows 8. So they need a way to kind of incorporate that UI design.
Do we know if the mini Start menu will have live tiles in it? That would be cool.
I forget. Yeah, Paul wrote something about
the live
that.
Tiles, yeah. It will. Yeah, it will.
It will.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way I understand they're doing it isn't so horrible. So they're you know, as you might expect, there are people that actually like the start screen. And they're saying, well, hold on a second. I like the start screen. Why are you going back to a start menu? And actually, the way I understand it to work is that you can maximize the start menu. And when you do, it looks and works a lot like the start screen does today. There are some visual changes, but it's basically a full screen version of the start menu, which today we call the start screen. So I think it's an attempt to kind of meet everybody halfway.
You write, Paul, that they are going to bring in virtual desktops.
Yep. This is actually Nia Nguyen writing this.
This is, by the way, we're looking at Ubuntu. Because they do it. Is Microsoft going to do the same thing Ubuntu's doing?
Yeah, they are. Linux has done this for years.
Yep.
So if you know what virtual desktops are, it's a way to basically stay more organized and have multiple desktops. It's almost like the ability to have multiple desktops running on your one machine, even if it's a smaller screen machine.
I've been doing this on the Mac for a couple of generations. And I do exactly that. For one of my desktops is Windows, is a full is VMware Fusion, so I have a Windows desktop, email. So that for full screen apps, that's a nice kind of combination, because you can go full screen on your browser or your email, and then with a keystroke or a mouse stroke, go to another desktop, and they're all, it's like a carousel.
Yep.
And I kind of like just, that.
Just to be clear, though, Windows NT, NT versions of Windows have had this capability built in. Yeah. They just never have exposed it in the basic UI. But Mark Rozinovich, if I'm not mistaken, wrote a utility many, many years ago that allowed, I think it was Mark, that allowed you to surface this multiple desktop, you know, experience.
It's a great way to work.
Virtual distance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I, in fact, I thought it was in Windows.
No.
Well, I my understanding is Microsoft never added it directly to Windows because it was just considered too confusing.
Yeah.
To normal users.
But you know where it really comes, it really shines. I mean, one way to use it is say, okay, this is going to be my VPN screen and have all the little windows that you need to have open, the controls and stuff. And this is going to be my word processing screen and have multiple windows. But where it really, I think, shines is when you're in full screen mode, because then it's it kind of solves the biggest problem with full screen mode, which is that you've taken over the screen.
Yeah.
And and so, in fact, I was just scrolling, for those watching on video, I was just scrolling through. So I have our OneNote open. I have my calendar open. I have an audio editor. Here's the chat room. There's Twitter. These are all in separate screens. And, you know, of course, I can Alt-Tab, is just like Windows, to any individual app. But I can also go through the carousel of screens. And that seems like a good way to handle full-screen apps. So I'm glad. This sounds good.
Yep. On Twitter, Richard Burt's saying sysinternals have had the multi-desktop utility.
Right,
so it's just kind of going back to something. Maybe this will just be a power user feature, not for everybody, or they'll somehow make it accessible for people who are enthusiasts and who want it, right?
Yeah, a lot of people don't want it, but having the capability is nice.
Yep.
Will it show up in the taskbar as... that's what it does in Linux. It shows up in the taskbar, and you could see like a little map.
I would think so.
Yeah,
I would bet it's going to work like that, but I don't know that for sure. But I hear from my sources, this is there, and it's coming in Threshold.
So NeoWin broke this, but your sources concur.
My sources say yes. Now, the other one is even more interesting that came out this week, and I think it was WinBeta that had this first, and they said the Charms bar, as we know it today, is going away. Yay!
What?
Thank goodness.
I know. Oh, thank God.
What?
Well, what? So awful.
I've just gotten used to it.
I know.
I hated it for a long time.
Yeah.
And now I'm used to it, and now they're going to get rid of it. Wow.
Yeah. So when beta, and I think NeoWin also said this, they said maybe it's going to go away for some users, maybe just for desktop users. But I've been asking around this week, and I hear it's gone for everybody. Gone.
So this is one of those changes that's going to make about half the crowd happy and half the crowd furious.
Yeah, I wonder about that. The only thing about the Charms, though, and I run into this a lot, you know, when you're on the desktop, especially, you're limited to what they can do. I mean, obviously, some of the system-wide stuff works fine, but the promise of this thing was greater than the reality. And the communication on this one in particular has always been terrible. I remember that when they very first announced this, I talked to some of the guys who actually designed this UI. It was like, so what do I call this thing? Is it called like a Charms bar, a toolbar? You know, and they're like, no, it's just the Charms. You know, and it's like, this is, nope, this is stupid. And like, no, it's just the Charms. And it's like,
It really was the first thing I harped on that I hated about Windows 8.
I think everyone hates it reflexively the first moment they see it,
But where it makes sense, and where clearly the reason it's in there, is when you're using a tablet and you swipe in from the right side of the screen, and there it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a natural way. In fact, I remember 10 years ago, my HP tablet, they always had these little things that swiped or touched it.
Yeah.
When you popped on my HP tablet, when you popped the stylus out, a little bar would slide in that was stylus-friendly stuff.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
I'm waiting to hear they're going to bring back the Longhorn sidebar to fill that space.
Active desktop, it's back.
Yeah. Yep.
This is one, though. I I feel really glad, and I think enterprise users are going to be really glad that this is gone, mm-hmm. because so many people could never find them or figure out, like, oh, I have to go to the charms bar to figure out permissions or accounts or where, what, like, why do I have to go over there, right?
Well, that's exactly right. That was the confusion.
Yeah. Yeah. So supposedly contracts still exist, which is if you say you want to share, right? You have an app open, right. You want to share to another app, you'll be able to share, but the developers are going to have to add a share button somehow to the app if you want to engage with the contracts. Because right now, share is one of the charms. Right.
Also, global search is one of the charms. Although, interestingly, in an update one, they moved a button up out of the charms. So mm-hmm. they have that magnifying glass there.
Yeah.
Is that new? I think they did that in 8.1.
Yeah, that was update, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Update one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, so I'm thinking there's search, there's the settings, there's share. It seemed like the whole idea of this is context-sensitive charms.
Yeah.
But I think they could do that with a right click, frankly. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they're going to have a way to do what you can do. That'll be more discoverable, more familiar, and it's going to go away. Yay. I know there are people who do like the charms, especially on tablets.
Get
but
ready for the howls. I guarantee you.
But no, because for everything that people complain about, start screen, a typical example, once they take it away, and of course you get all the cheers from the people who want the start mm-hmm. menu back.
Right.
Then you start hearing from the people say, hold on a second, I like this thing.
Yeah.
And that will absolutely happen with the charms bar. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as somebody in the chat room, RevX pointed out, you can't right click on a tablet. And that's probably one of the reasons they have that. Mm-hmm. So now
you can tap and hold. I mean, they've already solved it. I mean, tap and hold. I mean, this is what they do, what they call like a long press. You know, they do this in Windows Phone.
Android has it. Windows Phone has it.
Yeah.
And we're all used to it now. I think part of what has happened also is touch was a new vocabulary, not just for Microsoft, but for all users. But in that intervening few years, it's become so standardized that there is an actual vocabulary of touch that everybody understands, like long press, that now Microsoft can start to adhere to.
Well, I'm just making this up as I say this, but the other thing to think about is that...
I did too.
Well, no, I mean, it's occurring to me. I mean...
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft is working to bring Windows Phone and Windows closer together.
Right.
Windows Phone already has the notion of global buttons that can appear on screen, you know, start, back, search.
Right.
There's no reason that those couldn't be made more consistent. And maybe we'll see something like that in, you know, big Windows or whatever on a tablet, perhaps.
Big boy Windows, I call it.
Yeah.
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 I have to say that this user interface on Windows Phone is close to perfection. I mean, I really...
Leo, I'm going to use that quote as my ringtone.
Close to perfection. It doesn't have charms.
but it has charm.
But it has charm. I think it's so nicely done, and it's intuitive and easy to use, and it's, you know, they rethought it, and I think they did a good job, you know.
Oh, if we could just turn back the hands of time, I would give anything for the Windows team to have just talked the Windows Phone team back then.
It's like,
and just talked.
You know what we found works?
It's crazy. I know. You could steal from them and then change half of
it. Well, and here's an example. When you pop up weather, down at the bottom are context-aware buttons, you know, unpin, pin, search. And there's a little menu bar. This is a way that you could, you know, there's ways to make this work without a touch.
Again, not to get too far off in a field, but you were talking about how touch was new and things evolve. I mean, one of the things you see in mobile apps is this notion of refreshing, where you kind of pull down and you get the little rubber band effect.
Yes.
And suddenly that appears everywhere. You see now in many mobile app or mobile experiences, this notion of kind of a shelf that comes over with that little hamburger button, where now you get this kind of consistent way to access settings and other parts of the app. You know, this is the type of thing that Microsoft needs to be doing across Windows Phone and Windows, big Windows, and make these things consistent. And I think the problem with the charms is, you know, Windows Phone sort of has a notion of contract in the sense that you can share through Windows Phone apps. They just handle it in a different way. And those differences are tough. You know, they can be weird. And obviously desktop computers have different needs than little phones, and I get that. But I mean, I really hope that part of the reason they could be getting rid of charms is just to make these systems more consistent, however they choose to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And also to make users more productive, since now Microsoft's the productivity and platforms company. And that means they're paying attention to businesses now, and businesses do not want the charms. I can't say every business, but they want things to be discoverable and more familiar so they don't have to pay thousands or millions in training.
We were talking last week about the update to Windows Phone. This is, as everybody knows, an unlocked. It's actually the Mexican Nokia 1520 that I purchased online. Mm-hmm. I'm still black. I got an update. Got all excited. I thought, oh, maybe I got cyan.
Right.
But it's black. But I did get an update of some kind. Is that, was that, I don't know what it was.
Well.
is there any way to know?
So you're on the you are on the developer preview.
Yes.
Then you won't, you probably did get update one.
Yeah, it looks like
and
I did.
Yeah. The way to know that for a fact, the quickest way is to simply try to drag a tile on top of another tile and see if it creates a folder.
Oh, cool. And it does say, it does indeed say in the, if I do the about this phone, it says Windows Phone 8.1 update. So that would be it.
Oh, it does. That would be the other way.
Yeah. So, okay. I could take anything and drag it in. So let's maybe make, I'm going to make a social media folder. So I could drag it into there. Oh, look. Oh. It's just like Android. It jumps around just like Android 2, by the way. Oh, there we go. I got it. So now I have a live folder. So that's the live folder thing. In fact, this is going to be my social media folder. I could save a lot of space putting all this stuff in this one little
folder. I didn't think I was going to like folders in Windows Phone, but having just reset a phone and rethinking how my start menu works and everything, I actually have to say it's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's okay. You know what it is? It solves a problem, which is you can see how many icons I have on my front.
Well, it's you're right, density. So the problem when you have Windows Phone handles the start screen different than Android and iOS. It's a vertical scroll.
Right.
And it's not very friendly to have a gigantic, tall...
You have below the fold suddenly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this allows you to have more above the fold. And I think it will, at least in my case, just very short term, it's caused me to put more stuff on the start screen.
Right.
And then use those things more often because I can see them.
So I'm going to put all the Bing apps into a folder, travel, news... Mm-hmm. And you know what's neat? If it's a live, so here's travel in there, and because it's a live tile, it does its little live tile thing inside the little folder.
Right,
and
cool. You can still resize those tiles inside the folder and, of course, organize them however you want.
I like that.
Yeah, there's a nice little presentation going on there.
That's good. So if you have an HTC 8X or 8S, update one availability will resume once they fix some bugs, unknown.
Yeah.
But for
I was hearing from, people were saying, I don't think we're going to get update one on the 8X. And I asked Microsoft and they said, no, they're just fixing some bugs, but they're going to do it for sure.
But they won't might not when. Be getting it on the 8S.
Really? They responded with 8S on 8X when I asked them.
Oh, they did. Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
This is nice. Is there anything else I should look for in 8.1 update?
Well, if you are somebody who cares about consumer Wi-Fi, I'm sorry, consumer VPN, you will like that update
that's built
as well.
In. Okay, good. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Internet Explorer has been significantly updated. And it's funny because depending on the HTML code in a given web page, it will emulate Android or iOS. And so this leads to the kind of funny bits where people on Windows Phone will be offered the app for a site's iOS or Android app, depending on the site, because it's different. You know, depending on the code.
Right.
But the point of that is to make the sites just look right.
This is good. I'm happy.
Yep.
I really like this phone. I really do. It's just the hardware, the form factor is really nice. And they keep making it a little bit better every time.
Yep.
You notice, by the way, one of the big buttons here, Audible. I love my Audible.com, and they have a really nice Windows Phone app. I've been listening lately to Graham Nash's book, Wild Tales. It is great. He reads it, which is fun. So he has this great Mancusian accent, and he sounds so good. Also, The Goldfinch, which Mary Jo and I talked about, wonderful novel. What are you listening to? Paul, you probably loaded up your Audible before you got on the plane. What are you listening to?
So I Padre recommended The Martian a few weeks back, and I've listened to that. That is one of the best Audible books ever that I've ever read, ever.
Agreed.
What this triggered in me, though, was a desire to go back and look at 2001, A Space Odyssey, which, you know, obviously is more fantastical and whatnot, but is written as a kind of a science book. And it was written at a time when we hadn't even gotten to the moon, and the science in it is, in fact, you know, it was accurate to the day and all that kind of stuff. The story is absolutely fantastic. It's not very long. It's under 7 hours. Audible has... There are four books in this series, 2001, 2010, 2061, and 3001. And I can't, well, I could explain it, but for whatever reason, 2010 is in fact my favorite book in the series. And that's the one that's not on Audible, and I don't know why. They have the other three, but they don't have the second one. But, you know, if you're familiar with the movie and you kind of understand the kind of 60s kind of spacey quality to it, the book is the exact opposite in the sense that it's the same story, and it's not like a big story. It's kind of a small story, but the book explains everything. So where the movie is just vague and it's not really clear what the heck is happening, the book explains everything. You know that there is an alien intelligence that puts this monolith on Earth and jumpstarts mankind, and you know that he left the thing, you know, that they left the device on the moon to... so that when mankind got into space and discovered it, they would be of sufficient, you know, science to join them. And it's everything that is vague and like not understood about the book is, I'm sorry, about the movie is laid bare in the book. It's
you know, it's
really,
funny
really
is,
cool.
As I remember, that was written concurrently with the movie. So Arthur C. Clarke is writing the script. Stanley Kubrick's making the movie. They're making the book at the same time. It wasn't a novelization, but it was just kind of done concurrently.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the goofiest little bit of trivia about that is that he being Arthur C. Clarke, thought there was no way to do a sequel. And then I want to say 15 years later or so, he finally did write the first sequel, 2010. 2010 is a sequel to the movie. So the movie and the book 2001 actually differ in some fairly dramatic ways. In the book, they go to Saturn, not to Jupiter and so forth. But there are differences, you know, if you're familiar with the books. If you read the book straight through, you might be confused at the beginning of 2010 because in that book, they're referencing what happens in the movie, not what happens in the book.
Oh, that's weird.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very strange. But the books are, at least the first three anyway, are all they're absolutely fantastic.
It's a must read, and I agree with you on The Martian, which is Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Andy
so
Weir, its author, so will be funny. Joining us Monday on Triangulation. I'm going to spend
tell him that this book is like a triumph. It is.
Yeah.
The science is amazing.
Yeah.
The humor is amazing.
Yeah.
It is really well told.
It's one of those books where you burst out laughing.
It's oh, I
I'm
love it.
It.
I
are you?
Yeah.
To it.
Oh, neat.
I recite parts of it to my wife. I mean, of course, she's looking at me like.
You know what? Lisa and I listened to it together while we were in Hawaii.
Oh, so
that was
so
fun.
Good.
So that's something I'd never done before. But either we would share the earbuds on the plane, or when we're driving to the road to Hana, we're listening, and it was really fun. It's a good. Brian Brushwood encouraged me to do that because he listened to it with Bonnie. Anyway, we're going to tell you how you get any book at audible.com for free. How about this? It may be The Martian. It may be 2001. It may be, there's so many good choices. Well, 150,000 good choices. We're going to tell you how to get the Gold Plan. That is a book a month and a subscription. Plus with that, you get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal read to you. Your first month is free. That means you can get the book, get the digest, pay nothing. The book is yours to keep forever. If you cancel in the first 30 days, that's that. But I don't think you will, because I think Audible is, I've been a member since the year 2000. So 14 years now. And I have hundreds of books in my library. And I'm now listening to three or four books at the same time. I'm listening to the Beatles biography and Graham Nash's biography. That's fun, because you listen together. They're kind of, growing up at the same time in the north of England, they're talking about like how Heartbreak Hotel was a life changer, how they went to see Bill Haley and the Comets, and that nothing was ever the same again. It's a really interesting parallel development. Audible's great. And as you can see, when Audible listeners get together, all we do is we talk about the books we're reading, or listening to. Go to audible.com/windows to get that gold plan, by the way. Free book waiting for you. The hard part is picking your first book, but you know what? You're going to get a new book every month, and the world of reading will reopen to you. audible.com/windows, and we thank them so much. They've been one of the not only staunch supporters of us, we've been advertising for them for years, but of the success they had with Twit has led them to advertise on a great many other podcasts. So they've been a real supporter of podcasts in general. So they deserve your thanks and gratitude, and you deserve Audible. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're talking Windows and moving to the next topic, Surface Pro 3. Did you see the analyst who said that they lost Microsoft doesn't say how much they've lost on Surface, right?
Yeah, they're not saying.
This analyst claimed more than $100 million over the life of Surface and something like a $17 million loss on Surface Pro 3. I'm going to have to find the article for the X.
Yeah, we've got a link there to it. There's Computer World did their own calculations. They estimated $1.7
billion. Whoa!
Surface Computer World did their own.
They went back and used SEC documents.
Whoa, that's in 2 years.
But the analysts, the analysts they quote is pretty close in their estimate.
So it's in the ballpark. They're not really. I mean, it's not 1 billion. It's a lot.
Well, they had that $900 million right.
Yeah, so that's
down.
That's a given right there.
Right. So that's like close there. And then this quarter, they didn't release their cost of revenue for the Surface. So they made it harder to calculate how much they're really losing. But they went back and looked at the 10K and said, you know what? You can kind of derive what they're losing. And they're losing a lot of money.
So on the order of 300, 400 million.
Yeah. Yep.
This quarter.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. They launched a major new product.
This
is the type of thing that's going to happen.
Look how long Xbox was in the red. Microsoft kept pouring money into it, and they said, you know what, we're going to be in this market, and they lost a lot of money on the Xbox for years. Yeah. So I don't know how long.
I mean, several billion
decades,
per console.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, I don't know
seriously.
How long.
It's in the.
And at some point they started making money, but I don't think they're in the black if you include all the losses yet, still.
No, they're absolutely not even close. Not even close.
So, yeah, you made a business, a successful business, and I guess someday they'll be in the black. But, you know, if you lose billions, it's hard.
Yeah.
This is chump change.
Okay, they can afford it is what you're saying. Okay.
And, you know, it's a funny thing to try to calculate. Why are they losing so much money? I mean, part of it is just the costs you incur when you start a brand new business, especially one that's involved with hardware manufacturing. But they also have had a problem with supply with the Surface, and it's been in limited supply. It's run out a lot. And just this week, they've announced they're finally going to make it available in 25 countries outside the U.S. starting August 28th. So in most countries, you couldn't even buy a Surface if you wanted one. This has happened too, right?
Sure. I mean, it's hard not to think that they were so burned by whatever miscalculation caused that $900 million write-off that they're now, you know, really leaning toward the opposite end. Yeah.
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 Yep. Definitely. Definitely so.
That said, I mean, 25 more countries on one day is really significant.
It is. Including the UK, Australia. I mean, like some really big potential markets. Germany, Thailand, Taiwan, France, Belgium, China gets added. So, it's been really, really limited in terms of how you could get the Surface. I mean, they still don't even have a reseller program for the Surface. They have distributors, but they don't have their regular, value-added resellers selling the Surface still. So you wonder, would that help them really push it, especially into the business market, if they could turn that on? And they haven't turned that on yet either.
I mean, that gets into a weird area, though, doesn't it? If they, you know, they don't want to compete with their partners.
Yeah. Well, they are, though, right?
So. No, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it's you know, the question is, how long will Satya Nadella allow for Surface to keep losing money? I mean, Steve Ballmer used to be somebody who always said, I'm a long-term guy. I take the long view. I'm willing to lose money 10 years, 15 years if I think this is going to be a longer-term business. But under Nadella, he's talking about hardware as just being something that Microsoft's in to showcase its software.
That's the question. What are your goals with Surface?
Right, right. He's not talking about it like... He's also not talking about the Lumias. So we don't really know how far he'll support Microsoft doing this, or if it'll just be like more of a novelty or a reference design or something like that.
They're below the surface. They're underwater.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting. By the way, Steve Ballmer doesn't work there anymore, right? I guess he's on the board.
No, he does not. He has other things to do.
He's got a basketball team to run.
He's got a basketball team to run.
So maybe that strategy wasn't such a hot strategy. You got to think Nadella is certainly assessing at this point what to do.
Yep.
And I think you're right. It has to do with what your goals are.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we don't really know with Surface. I mean, he's talking about it as he's not calling it out as a reference design or something meant to spur OEMs to build better machines. But he's definitely not talking about things like Lumias and Surfaces as things that Microsoft's got in their core DNA now. It's more of a thing they have that's meant to help them sell software and services. That's the goal.
At some point, Wall Street's going to say, hey, knock it off. They didn't like these online losses, the Bing losses. That didn't change Microsoft's plan, but they made it clear that it wasn't a good thing.
Yep.
That's a big loss. Okay, Surface Pro 3, the i7 model's now out. That's nice. Would you recommend getting an i3 or an i7? Or is the i5 just the sweet spot?
I can tell you from when I bought my laptop, I don't have a Surface. I decided not to get one mostly because of lappability issues for me, but... I noticed there is a difference in terms of battery life. Not a giant difference,
but there is some
battery life improvement with the i7. And also, I feel like if you're buying something like this, you want to future-proof yourself as much as possible. Right. So you should buy the highest-end machine if you're going to make it your daily machine.
Right.
I don't know what Paul would say if he's used that.
Can you hear us, Paul?
He might be muted, is he?
Paul? You're muted. Yeah. That's the problem.
I've muted myself.
You have. You have muted yourself, sir.
Well, let me tell you what I've been talking about for the past 17 minutes. No,
sorry.
That's okay. It's hard to say because I don't have these to test. I think the i3 model is a bit too constrained in the sense that it can't do a bunch of stuff at one time. It doesn't have... some of the advanced capabilities of the i5 and the i7. So I'd stray away from that one personally. My concerns on the i7 are heat and fan noise, and then related to that, just durability. I agree with Mary Jo that you want to future-proof something, especially when you spend a lot of money on it. I just need to know more. I mean, I'm nervous about the high-end versions, and I've been trying to collect feedback from readers, and you know, the i5 version of the Surface Pro can get really hot up in the corner by where the USB port is and the mini display port area. And my understanding, I've not experienced this personally, but what I've heard is that on an i7, that can get roasting hot. And I'd be a little nervous about that. But yeah, I think right now the i5 is probably the sweet spot. But I need to know more about those higher end versions.
Have you tried the docking station yet, Paul? You have, right?
Yeah, I have it. Yep. I actually brought it to Barcelona with me, if you can believe that.
Oh, nice.
And you like it?
Yeah, it's really nice. And so it has the same kind of build quality as the Surface Pro 2 version. Obviously, it's got more expansion capabilities. But I think the biggest deal here, aside from the fact that the Surface Pro 3 is just a better machine all around, is that because of the way they designed the Surface Pro 3, you can take advantage of the USB port that's on the machine even when it's docked. You know, in the previous one, it was inside where the docking mechanism was. But more important, you can also use the video out. And so a lot of people are nervous about the single video out in Surface Pro, the single video out on the Surface Pro dock. But you can utilize both at the same time. And, of course, you can daisy chain them. So you can have, without any special cables or anything, you could have two external monitors hooked up to this thing at the same time. And if you do daisy chaining, you could have four. And so theoretically, especially in an i7 type machine, you could have five displays, including your built-in display. But then that's more than anyone normal should ever need. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive expansion capabilities.
Yeah. Um, 25 more countries starting at the end of the month. That's good.
Yep.
Now they can lose more money.
Yep. It's exponential.
Well, that's actually, that is kind of a question. Is they don't lose money on each sale. They lose money because of right? It's R&D.
Do they? Yeah, I don't know.
In other words,
Nokia did.
Can you dig yourself out of the hole by selling more of them, or does that just make it worse?
Leo, it's the change bank theory.
What's that?
We make more through volume. It's like the bank that, you know, just makes change. How do you make money? Volume. You know, if they could just sell millions of these things, they'd be all set.
We'd be golden.
Yep.
We didn't really talk too much about China and Microsoft last week, mostly because it's obvious what's going on. This is a little, you know, tug of war back and forth. Microsoft is a proxy for the United States government in this case, I would guess. They're doing it to a lot of other companies as well. Is it getting worse? Is it getting ugly, as you say here? This is Mary Jo Foley. This is you.
Paul.
Yeah, well, so it's just unclear what's happening here, right? So, obviously, Microsoft's office were raided, you know, as some people say. Documents were taken. Executives were interrogated. No one's saying why exactly antitrust has been thrown around. Obviously, China is worried that Microsoft is helping the United States government spy on it and so forth. But then this week... China actually publicly warned Microsoft not to involve the government of the United States in its defense against these charges. Like, proactively, like, warned, like, it's just kind of bizarre behavior. So, you know, when you consider how antitrust regulators act in various countries, obviously we were experienced with that with the United States from Microsoft primarily. We've seen the EU and how they act toward Microsoft in the past, but Intel, we know how that went down. Google now, Apple is running afoul of them. It's a certain politeness, you know, to the conversation. I mean, the China thing is really strange. They've never come out and said, this is what we're investigating you for, at least not publicly. But they have come out publicly and said, don't think about getting the United States involved.
You know, why wouldn't you? I mean...
I that's the first thing I would do,
yeah.
Personally, you know. I don't know. So I find this is interesting. And I would say as far as China's concerned and as far as, you know, foreign technology invading the company and so forth, a country, I think Android probably a bigger problem than, say, Microsoft, Windows or whatever. This whole thing is very strange.
It's analogous because in both the case of Android and Microsoft, probably the vast majority of copies are pirated, not purchased.
Yeah, but you'd have to think that mobile device usage, especially phones, has got to outweigh computer usage by 10 to 1.
Right.
You know, something along that line.
That's true, too, yeah.
Granted, governmental employees are using Windows-based computers, yada, 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 but this just seems like a curious choice. You know, it's not like any of us can sit here and say, oh, yeah, remember Microsoft did that thing? Yeah, I thought China might come down on them for that.
No,
you know, that thing they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah. So it's really unclear what's happening.
Some people have been speculating it has to do with XP, even, that XP, Microsoft withdrew support, right? And China's like,
well,
wait.
Well, China certainly made a big deal about that. They said, we're not going to buy any more XP. That was actually the beginning of this, or at least the beginning that publicly.
And obviously Microsoft's issue there was that they didn't warn this was coming for years in advance.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, April was such a shocker.
It's hard to take this seriously. And if you're at Microsoft, of course, you do have to take it seriously.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
But it's hard to take it seriously. It really feels it's more about politics than anything else. And it's ironic that they're saying don't get the U.S. government involved when, in fact, this is clearly aimed at the U.S. government.
Yeah.
It's by proxy.
Yeah. A lot of these antitrust cases, like the other one we didn't really talk about yet, but, you know, Microsoft filing the Android patent royalty suit against Samsung. Samsung supposedly trying to get out of its contract with Microsoft to pay them royalties on every Android device, but kind of rattling the antitrust sabers in Korea and saying, hey, you know what? We think when you guys bought Nokia, that invalidated this.
It may also have to do. Didn't Microsoft do a big layoff at the Nokia plant in China?
Yeah, they did.
Well, they did, but how many people are we really talking about? I mean,
this happens all the time in China. In fact, it's a noted problem that these workers are employed during boom cycles and then laid off during bust cycles for Foxconn and every other company. Yeah. And it's kind of a problem. But it's not a problem the Chinese government recognizes or worries about. It's just a problem for the people involved. Microsoft's offering a free phone.
I haven't gotten Microsoft to comment on this if this is real. But yeah, there was a report on MarketWatch today saying Microsoft's offering the people in the Chinese factories for Nokia a free Lumia 630 smartphone if they take a voluntary resignation package, which is kind of odd.
By the way, street value, approximately $99.
Yeah, here's a $100 phone. Now get out of here.
It's crazy. Right. No, you can pick the color shell you want, but then you got to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, 10-20, maybe.
Is Microsoft thinking of pulling out of China? No, in fact, didn't we talk about this? Their products are more Chinese-friendly than ever.
Yeah, you can't pull out of China.
No. They just launched Cortana in China. They're launching the Surface in China. It's like, they're not pulling out Xbox, right?
Right. In fact, Xbox...
You'd be better off pulling out of the United States at this point than pulling out of China.
Yeah, we're a small portion of their sales. Wow.
An ever-shrinking percentage.
That's saying something, isn't it?
Yep.
You can't pull out of China, ladies and gentlemen. Just a word of warning. It's like Hotel California. Once you check in, you just cannot check out. We have the back of the book coming up in just a bit. Paul's picks, Mary Jo's beers and enterprise picks and code names and all sorts of stuff. But first, a word from our friends at Carbonite. Backup is important. You know that. I shouldn't have to tell you that. You know who really knows that? Anybody who's ever lost data, which is almost almost everybody. Usually that's what it takes to get you to go, oh, crud, I better start backing this stuff up. And yet, every weekend I get calls on the radio show. My hard drive died, and that's the only place I have the pictures of my dog or whatever. And it just breaks my heart. So maybe because you listen to Windows Weekly, you're probably a smart, sophisticated user. You know all about Carbonite. You already have a backup strategy. But make sure your friends and family know too, will you? And if you work at a company, make sure, you know, just might ask, hey, what? You guys back this stuff up? Because if they don't, a fire could destroy not only the building, but the business forever. You lose all the accounts receivable, the client list, the supplier list, you're gone. That's why 50,000 small businesses use Carbonite. Carbonite even has a great solution, a hardware solution for small businesses that lets you back up locally and to the Carbonite cloud. The best thing about Carbonite, from everybody's point of view, whether you're a business or a home user, is the price. Very affordable, flat rate pricing. That means you pay once a year, you install it, and then you forget it. Automatically, continuously, you're backed up. You can check your Carbonite account by logging into Carbonite from any computer or using their smartphone apps. You can see your stuff. You can download it. You can email it. They are HIPAA compliant. Yes. So far, Carbonite has backed up 300 billion files, about 350 million a day. These guys are good. Those are files that will never be lost, thanks to Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Here's the deal. If you go there now, use the offer code Windows. You can try it for free. It's as little as $59.99 a year for a single computer. As I said, they have plans for businesses, for servers, for external drives. And if you call them, you can find out more about the hardware, appliance, and so forth. Carbonite.com. Try it today for free when you use the offer code Windows. And if you decide to buy after you do that, you'll get 2 bonus months as a thank you. Carbonite.com. Offer code Windows. Try it today. You have no excuse. You can't call me and say, hey, I lost all my data, because I'm just going to say, hey, didn't you hear me tell you about Carbonite? Paul Thurrott, even though he's in Barcelona, he rests not. He is always working, always providing you with valuable content, including this tip of the week.
Oh, nice echo effect. So we're in kind of a weird space right now from a Windows Phone perspective, because for years we've complained we never got any updates. And then all of a sudden, starting last year, we started getting updates. And then Microsoft started this developer preview program. We got Windows Phone 8.1 early if we wanted it. And, of course, one of the big promises with that release was no worries. When the final version comes out from your carrier, we'll have firmware updates. We'll have carrier updates. You'll get all that stuff. You don't have to worry about it. And then, of course, that didn't happen, at least not yet. Microsoft says they're working on that problem, getting people in the developer preview up onto the what we'll think of as the general availability version, the GA version. And then they released Windows Phone 8.1 update, which actually I see in the notes I didn't write correctly, so I should call that Windows Phone 8.1 update. Update 1, as I call it, or because that's what it's really called. So this is triggering a lot of questions from people. So, for example, if you're an enthusiast like myself and you've installed the developer preview version of Windows Phone 8.1 on your 8.0 phone, but you haven't gotten Lumia Cyan if you have a Lumia device or whatever firmware for your, whatever device you may have, and you haven't gotten your carrier updates, if you haven't gotten what I'm calling the GA version of Windows Phone 8.1, does that mean I can get update 1? And if I do get update 1, does that mean I won't get Cyan later? I mean, how does that stuff work? How does it work? I asked Microsoft, and what they told me was firmware updates have nothing to do with this. If you install Update 1 now and your carrier releases Windows Phone 8.1 pre-Update 1 with Cyan, with whatever updates the carrier gives you, you'll still get that stuff. It won't ruin it, Update 1. It won't prevent you from getting it. So there's no reason not to get this now. And in fact, the way I look at this is Windows Phone 8.1 Update 1 is such a minor update compared to Windows Phone 8.1. Given the way that update went, I would say, you know, you're pretty much in the game now. Why not just go grab this? And if you're in a developer preview, you're going to get it. Well, not automatically, but you can go get it. You'll be prompted for it.
Yeah, it just offered it to me. I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, the process is just like it was before. So, but the issue is this. So, you know, for example, your phone is a good example. Your phone still has the black.
Yeah, I'm not saying
firmware update. And so, updating to update 1, you know, you may be thinking, well, I'm only on black. Does that mean I can't get Cyan now? And according to Microsoft, the answer is no. You'll get it whenever your carrier release or that whatever the carrier is that originally originated on releases update 1. I'm sorry, releases 8.1, which it will include Cyan in your case. It could release. Could include carrier-related updates as well, you will get it. And so those things are separate. Like, you'll still get the constituent parts, even if you go forward to update one now.
Good.
The tip, again, for Microsoft, not for me, don't kill the messenger, is you will get it. And it's just a matter of time.
Good. Excited. Can't wait.
So, let's see. Software pick of the week. This is a cool little app. Again, it's another Windows Phone one. But if you're on Windows Phone 8, or 8.1 or 8.1 update 1, and you don't have this app, you got to get this. This one came out some months ago, but they updated this week. It's called Office Lens for Windows Phone 8 and 8.1 and above. It is obviously an Office app. It integrates with OneNote, and so you have to sign into your Microsoft account and associate the Office Lens app with your OneNote account. But when you do that, what it gives you is basically a little scanner, you know, through the camera in your phone. And you can scan photos, you can scan documents, you can scan a whiteboard, and it works in different ways in each of these modes. And the document mode is, to me, is the most useful. And it works crazy good in the sense that you can have a receipt sitting on the table. You don't have to be right over it. It doesn't have to be all squared off. You can take it at an angle. It will straighten it. It will color, you know, make the colors correct. It will crop it. You can do manual cropping if it doesn't work right. But that stuff has always worked really well. But the way that it worked until this update was it went into your quick notes section, a new note in the quick notes section of your default notebook, because you can remember you can have multiple notebooks in OneNote. And so with this update, they added a few scanning improvements around color balancing and so forth. I didn't actually notice a big deal there, but the really big deal is now you can configure it to go to any section in any notebook. And so I don't actually use Quick Notes personally. And so all the stuff that's in my Quick Notes is just garbage. It's handwriting samples from the Surface Pen. It's, you know, scans that I never did anything with. I created a scan section in a notebook that I wanted to use for this purpose and then configured the app to go to that. And it happens automatically once you configure it. And that's awesome. It's just awesome. This thing is so amazing. And so if you need to do things like scan receipts for business trips or just to keep track of them, like we're on this trip now, we scan kind of fun foreign receipts because they're fun and they're foreign and they're unusual. We scan them with this. And now we don't have to take the paper home and scan them later when we get home. It's a fun and awesome app and it's free. And if you have Windows Phone, you got to get it.
That's great. I had it, but I hadn't used it up. So now I'm.
It's so, so good.
That's good. Thank you, Paul. Enterprise pick of the week time from Mary Jo Foley.
Yep. Microsoft's Visual Studio team has been releasing regular updates to Visual Studio very rapidly, like once every quarter, pretty much. And they just finished up what is called Update 3 to Visual Studio 2013. They made it available for free download this week. And it has quite a few new features. They have Code Lens support for Git, multi-monitor support for Windows Store app development, view source support in the CPU usage diagnostic tools. But the thing that people are talking about the most is the end of all caps tyranny has finally arrived.
This was the charms of Visual Studio.
It was. So Microsoft was using all caps in Visual Studio, and now they're allowing you to do upper and lower case. And believe it or not, this was a really huge deal and very divisive in the community. And now with Update 3, you can opt to use upper and lower case, even though the default value is all caps still. Yeah, it's like when they changed the color scheme away from gray. Everybody was like, woo, woo-hoo. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but they stare at this thing all day long.
I get it.
So it's a good update. You should get it if you're using Visual Studio 2013.
And the code name pick
they're
of the
cranking,
week.
They're cranking those things out, aren't they?
They really are. The Visual Studio team is like right on it. They're very agile.
That's good.
Nice. Coding pick of the week. We're going back to geographic place names for this one, not Halo code names. This is Crete. And Crete is the code name for the next version of Microsoft's Dynamics NAV ERP product. So Dynamics NAV 2015's code name is Crete. It's going to be coming out in the fourth quarter of 2014. And it has some pretty interesting features if you're into ERP software. It's going to have some new business intelligence capabilities, and there's going to be a tablet version accompanying this product, which could be very interesting. It'll be interesting to see if they create a modern app, which is what I bet they're going to do, so a modern ERP app. And they say they're already putting people into the technology adoption program for this, and so it should be out fairly soon. Codename Crete.
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 One of my favorite places.
Is it? Yeah, I've never been there.
The Greeks don't call it Crete.
Oh, they don't?
What do they call it?
It's got another name. I can't remember. Because it was funny because we went to Crete and nobody was calling it Crete. And I said, well, where are we? You're in Crete.
Where are we?
Yeah. What do they call it?
So is Crete like a Turkish name or something? Or what is that?
Probably. I don't remember. But it's, I'm looking. It's the largest, most populous of the Greek islands. Maybe they do call it Crete. Never mind.
False alarm.
False Crete. Alarm. There's some Greek island that they don't call by the right name. Anyway, I guess Crete is not it. Oh, yeah. Crete. They call it Crete.
Crete.
Crete. Okay. Now I want some beer.
Yeah.
Me too.
Let's have some, everybody. It's sun's gone over the yard arm in Barcelona.
Yep.
This better be a watered-down Pilsner from Barcelona.
Oh, yeah, it definitely
is. Is that what they
is.
Like?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Every hot place on Earth has the same exact beer.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's too
bad. Well, you can salivate on the beer I'm going to present here. Sierra Nevada is doing a thing they call the Beer Camp Beers. So they went around the country and they collaborated with some of the best breweries. And so they came out with a 12-pack, and they have different beers and cans from all these different collaborations they did. But I was in Seattle last week, and I went to a really awesome beer bar called Browers in Fremont, met up with a bunch of folks. And I get to drink some of these collaboration beers. And the one I really liked was called Sierra Nevada There and Back. And it's a collaboration they did with New Glarus Brewing from Wisconsin. It's called an English bitter. It's not hoppy, Paul Thurrott.
Nice.
And I think you'd really like it. It's a real easy drinking, but very flavorful English bitter style beer. Not too high in alcohol, but very tasty. Something you could just sit there and drink a few of. As a sessionable kind of beer.
Sessionable. It's a great euphemism. I love sessionable.
Yeah. And there's a whole ton of cool collaborations. If you see any of these, they did one with Russian River. They did one with, who else do they do? Allagash Brewing. And
it's a lot of the really big breweries. Sierra Nevada.
Yeah. They did some really, really cool styles, unusual styles. And some of them are in cans, some are in bottles. And you'll see many of them on tap around the country, too.
But Mary Jo likes There and Back.
I do.
Which is the original name of The Hobbit, There and Back Again.
Right.
And I was thinking of Corfu, not Greece.
Right. Yep.
The Greeks don't call it Corfu. But the Italians
I've not heard
do.
That.
Yeah. Italians call it Corfu. I think it's called Kerkira in Greek. That's what I was thinking of, not Crete. Okay. All right, kids. We have survived the Skype assault for the day.
Yes, we have.
And I've lost 15 pounds due to water loss.
Yeah. That's good. You can, Paul, you can go now. You can take a break. You're going to be here next week or not? I know one of the weeks you're not going to be here.
Right. So I will be away next week, actually.
Right. Yep. So, Mary Jo, we can either just be you and me, or we can bring in somebody else. It's all up to you and Paul. Whatever. Okay. This is your show. Bring in a ringer.
Might bring in a special guest. I will. Right.
And where are you going, Paul, that you're not going to be here? Are you going somewhere?
I don't know. Here's my plan. Usually we do a road trip while we're away like this. And this year we have not booked anything yet exactly. But our plan is somehow to make it to Gibraltar.
Ooh.
Take a ferry over to Africa.
Ooh.
Step foot in Africa, check out that continent off the bucket list, have lunch, and go home.
It's so worth doing. I have six of the seven continents.
Yeah.
I'm waiting on Antarctica.
Right.
And I thought I was going to get there last year, but no. So we're still...
Maybe we could do a meetup in Antarctica.
Let's do it. That way I'd have all seven continents, and I would be pretty... That would be a nice feeling. It's on my bucket list anyway. Good. Yeah, check off Africa. That's what we're going to say next week. Paul's not here. He's checking off Africa.
Right. Done.
Done.
Achievement unlocked.
That's really, that is the gaming way of travel. Achievement unlocked. You'll find Paul normally at the Supersite for Windows. He's there right now, winsupersite.com. And, of course, he's got many books about Windows. The latest is the Windows 8 Field Guide, which is a work in progress. Is it online?
Yeah, so right now, most of the books, you can get them at windows81book.com.
Okay. Windows81book.com.
The 81 book is done. Surface is in progress. Xbox Music is in progress.
This man is a dynamo. Just work. Scribble. Whoever it was, the king said to Boswell. Was it Boswell? Scribble, 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 eh, Mr. Boswell? I think Boswell was presenting a volume. Oh, maybe it was Gibbon presenting a volume of the Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire to one of the King Edward the Seventh. We'll just say that. And it was just yet another volume. And he said, "Ah, scribble, 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 eh, Mr. Gibbon?"
I can see that. Relate to that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to look that up. Mary Jo Foley scribbles all the time. She is a scribe, a Microsoft scribe at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's where you'll find her. And, of course, every Wednesday morning, 11 a.m., you'll find them both normally right here. It's 11 a.m. Pacific. Are you opening a beer? You just tapped.
No, that was a bucket. That was a bucket of ice that has turned to water that I will now drink.
It was actually Prince. It was 1781, so it was Prince William Henry, the Duke of Gloucester and Edinburgh. I'm receiving the second volume of Gibbon's Rise and Fall. Scribble, scribble, awesome. Scribble, eh, Mr. Gibbon?
Jeez. No respect for the writer.
It's like too many notes for Mozart. Too many notes.
Yeah.
11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, live. But if you can't make it live or if you want to join us in the studio, by the way, that family left. The daughter, the 7-year-old, was in tears. She just
after my insane tirade.
She'd never heard anything like it. They didn't stop for photos. No, they were fine.
Oh, that's too bad. Sorry about that.
No. It's fine. It was cute. The mother was going, shh. No. You can be here in studio. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We do have limited space in the small office, so do let us know you're going to be here so we can make room for you. And of course, you can always listen on demand, audio and video available everywhere you can find the podcasts, including, I understand, we're looking for, is this secret? I don't know if it's a secret, but one of our stalwarts in the chat room is writing a new Windows Phone app for Twit. Of course, we've got the great Dimitri Lee Allen app as well. Mm-hmm. So we're really, this is great. Those apps are fabulous. Windows Phone, Roku, iOS, Android, all the platforms. Thank you, you too. Appreciate it. And we'll see you next week. Paul, have a great day trip to Africa.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.